It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Well, folks, hatlings, all of our little darlings out there. Mom and Dad have officially started their 14th year. As of today, in fact.
Yeah, as of today.
Yesterday, we had a very lovely, romantic celebration of our 13th anniversary. It's private, so we're not going to tell you what happened. But no. Let's just say the relationship still has all its passion. So don't worry about that. Also, Dad may have discovered a new fetish, but it's not. It's, again, it's private. It's not. It's toes. But I'm not going to tell you what he does. If it's whose toes or don't be weird. The lady said that's very normal. The one who ran the event, she said it was very normal. And the crying afterwards, she said a lot of people. I mean, it wasn't. You guys don't either, but like that couple on the couch, they said they liked the crying. They thought it was sexy. Well, okay, they didn't say sexy. You know what? Never mind. The point is, we're fine.
Fine. Yep.
And learning new things about ourselves all the time.
Which one's Dad? I don't remember.
You're Dad, of course.
Oh, I'm Dad.
You've always been Dad.
Okay. All right.
You're the butchest guy I know.
Wow. Wow. I don't. Wow. Huh.
Yeah. Also, over in Mom's house, we are on day 9 without a furnace.
And it got cold last night, didn't it?
It got cold all weekend, and it was going to then be warmer this week. And then today, it was like, nope, it's going to be 40s in the day and 20s at night all week. So I called up the heating folk and was like, you know how you keep offering to give me some space heaters? And I said, no, I think we'll be fine. I don't think we'll be fine. So they brought some space heaters today. And then Wednesday, they're going to replace the furnace. Exciting new 95% efficiency 2-stage furnace.
I'm
very excited.
That you'll barely get to use before it's summer.
We'll use it another time. And actually, they were going to install central air too, but we decided against it for now. I got other. So my thinking, partially, I want to work on the pool instead first, but also. Our house is still kind of a mess. It's getting better all the time. And in fact, we're about to move Trish's desk and stuff into her new home office, and that's going to be cool. But there's still a lot of mess. And so there are a lot of vents that are covered still by crap or blocked off or whatever. And when it comes to heating, you know, that radiates a bit. Air conditioning, cold doesn't so much radiate, so I'm like, give it another year. And it hasn't been that bad for us. The window units work pretty good, so I'm like, give it another year or so. We'll have excavated a little more than we do it. It was surprisingly not that expensive, and shouldn't have to change all of the wiring, because since everything goes through the attic, because we're on a slab, they can just hook it up literally out by the breaker box. And basically not have to deal with wiring it through the house at all or anything. So
cool.
So that should be a good deal. But yeah, we're not going to do that right now, but we are going to get a new furnace. And so that'll be good.
Excellent.
So yeah, right now I'm sitting here with a really impressive space heater, just like right on me here. And as you can see, I'm not having to wear a hoodie no more or anything. So I've been wearing a lot of layers today, but right now I feel okay. And we got another one in the bedroom and they're pretty good, but it's also funny because when I walk between the two rooms, the rest of the house is still really fucking cold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when you have to go to the bathroom, it's not fun, but then you'll be fine. Got to get one just blowing straight on that toilet seat, I guess. Warm it up. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that is officially a teenager now. So, sorry, we're just going to be a jerk from now on. Well, not from now on, but at least for the next 5 to 10 years. In my experience. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 679.
679, goodness.
Yeah.
We'll hit a lot of episodes.
Episode 700 before the end of the year. I'm not sure when exactly.
Because you haven't been doing the math, because you've been busy working. We had to alter the time we're recording today because William has patients and they needed his time. And somehow his mental health professional job is a bigger priority than his podcast that half a dozen people listen to.
August. I think it's going to be around August.
Oh, okay. It took me a minute to figure out what you were talking about.
People will ask. It's like, oh, what are you guys going to do for episode 700? Well, nothing, probably.
I don't know. We didn't do anything for 600. We'll see. Maybe we'll start live streaming crazy stunts a la Jackass.
Oh, see, I'm already not in favor of that because I know what that's going to look like. You standing and watching while I do the crazy stunt. That's what's going to, I can see that. Right now.
I think it would actually be me and Delmer watching while you do.
Yeah.
We'll just be like.
You're right. That is what it would be.
No, you don't need a helmet. We're fine. Come on.
Walk it off.
Yeah. So how's your week been?
Oh, it's been good. I'm trying to think. We didn't really see any like big movies or anything. We watched, we've been watching Constellation.
I don't think I know that one.
And the somewhat similar The Signal.
I don't think I know that one either.
It's both have astronauts and weird goings on related to some conspiracies and things like that. They're both similar that way, but Constellation is that The Signal is a foreign series. I think it's German. I want to say that Germans or Danish made it. I don't know. And so it's got either subtitles or dubbing when you watch it. And it was pretty good. I mean, it was all right. I guess I'd recommend it to people if you're interested in that kind of thing. And basically space science fiction type of mystery where the special effects are really grounded. Like part of it takes place in the International Space Station, and they did a good job of showing people in it and stuff like how.
Also, if you like that kind of thing, watch Europa Report. And it's much shorter than a TV show.
And the Constellation is still going. They're still releasing their episodes every, I don't even know which day it is. But it has, I guess it's, maybe that's also foreign made, but it's mostly in English. And also a lot of it takes place in the ISS and it's a female lead who plays an astronaut.
That's how you know it's science fiction.
But also, it also has good special, like very accurate portrayals of, you know, life on the ISS and stuff, which I appreciate that. I appreciate when they pay a special attention to those details. But yeah, they're kind of similar in the setup. The plots aren't the same, but if you like science fiction that's really well grounded in at least in some ways, really well grounded, like a lot of science fiction, obviously the fiction part can kind of go off the rails, but I think they're pretty interesting, but that's all we've seen. I don't think we've seen any, we've been tempted to watch some maybe, you know, movies and stuff that have gotten out on streaming or whatever, but we haven't really done that. We've played a lot of Diablo though, because we like doing that. How was your week?
In like 9 days, it's coming to Game Pass.
Oh, yeah, and you'll get to take a look at it too. That'll be great. How was your week?
We're still doing Death and Other Details. It continues to be hot trash. It is starting, for me at least, to move from amusing hot trash into tedious hot trash. I will see it through, but man, it really thinks it's something, and it's really not. There's a conceit within it that one of the main characters is very good. Like, we don't ever explain it. Like, it's not like she has like a particular like brain condition or something, but she's very good at noticing details in flashbacks. So like she'll think back to a memory she had and she'll remember bits that she didn't before. But it also works when people are telling her stories. Like the flashback happens and they're sort of there and they talk while it's happening, which pushes it a little bit. But it goes so far as to she recognizes things that the storyteller doesn't, to the degree that like the storyteller wouldn't have mentioned it. Like, so recently had one where he was telling a story about something she wasn't present for, and she recognized a person in it as someone she had seen. Now, to be fair, the person telling the story was with her when she saw this person. So it is possible that he said, "This is that guy we saw." But he didn't say it on camera. And she then went and said, "That's that guy we saw," which seems insane. But the alternative is he described this man knowing she'd seen him in such specific detail without saying it that she was like, "That's that guy we saw." And I'm like, fucking what?
Yeah.
It's just, and it's, we're also, everybody's a goddamn billionaire. So I have no sympathy for anyone, and they're all terrible. It's so, and it thinks it's so goddamn. It's one of those shows that like more twists make smarter, right?
Yeah, right.
and it'll do these. It's really good at these like grandiose lines that I'm like, that means nothing. Like they said at one point, the best place to hide is in plain sight before revealing that something was hidden in a hiding place, not in plain sight. So, but anyway, it's pretty damn funny. But it's starting to wear thin. We aren't doing too much. We watched a couple movies. I've already forgotten one of them. Oh, we watched Asteroid City. Finally, I've been wanting to watch Asteroid City.
I haven't seen that, but yeah, we've been meaning to watch it too. Where did you see it on?
It's currently on Amazon. It was sitting on Peacock for a while. It's currently on Amazon with Prime. I think with ads now because fuck them. But you know, I liked it. Trish did not.
Oh,
I don't think I liked it a whole bunch, and I don't think she disliked it a whole bunch. But that's pretty much what it is. The most pure comedy film I have ever seen from Wes Anderson. And I think that suits him very well because his shit is bonkers and makes no sense. And that's better when it's a comedy.
Yeah.
It's not entirely. He has to get a little maudlin in there and a little thought provoking or whatever. But for the most part, it's just funny and it's quite funny. And I rather enjoyed that. yeah, so I like. I don't have a lot to say about it. It's got it's a Wes Anderson movie, so you know those. It's like that, but this one's very, very comedic. And then Trish had been jonesing for this for a while because she had it had been so long since she'd seen it she couldn't remember anything about it. And I hadn't seen it ever, so we watched The Big Lebowski.
Whoa. Yeah, that's another film. I don't remember very much about it. I've seen it.
Yeah.
I don't remember a lot about
Trish
it.
Trish couldn't remember hardly. She's like, I think they go to a bowling alley at one point. And I'm like, yes, a bowling alley features heavily. But there were lots of bits I didn't remember either. I knew sort of the setup to the plot, but then it all kind of went out. Here's what I will say. It's very dated in a lot of ways. It is very much of its time. I mean, it has a lot of references to that time, but also there's a lot of sensibilities that are very much of that time, both in a problematic way and just in a dated way.
Yeah.
I am still disturbed because a few different characters out of that movie sort of became role models to certain demographics and really shouldn't be.
Mm.
But I don't think the movie's glorifying them. I think people are just idiots. So setting all that aside, movie fucking holds up.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's interesting. It's very well shot. It's very Coen Brothers-y. And that's what's funny. At one point, Trish is like, I'm just really impressed with the dialogue. And I looked at her and I'm like, well, it's a Coen Brothers film. That's kind of their whole deal. So you're not wrong, but I'm surprised you're surprised. Because, yeah. But it has very naturalistic dialogue. It's got a lot of people. It's got a ton of people we all love, some of whom we hardly knew back then. But some really and some weird ones. Amy Mann, the musician, is in the movie for some reason. Barely, but she's in it. I don't know why. It's not a part that like requires singing or any. I mean, I know she acts occasionally, but it was just very weird. But yeah, so it was pretty good. I have been playing all the video games. Seriously, in the last since we got the Xbox, I have probably tried out like 20 new games.
Wow,
I'm constantly trying out new games. And something I have discovered that I'm super pleased about. I have not had a single bit of trouble playing any first person games.
Really?
Nice. Yes. I now am at a point, or I was earlier at a point where I can play some of them for a while and then I start to get sick. But this time, nothing. And I've done quite a few so far.
Nice.
All sorts of ones. I try them. I get rid of them. A lot of them are disappointing. A lot of them are not what I thought they were. It's really so many of them. I'm glad I'm not paying extra money for them. But that's just the thing. Because I can, I'm doing a whole bunch. Hi-Fi Rush is still really fun. I am noticing a theme where I'm sort of giving up on games when they start to get hard. And I'm like, on the one hand, that's not what I want out of a game. But on the other hand, maybe I'm giving up too easily and I'm missing out on stuff, but some of them are. There's a game that I thought was wholly just a puzzle game, and then I found out it has fucking boss fights in it. And I'm not good at them. And I'm like, yeah, fuck this. I do want to highlight a couple of them.
Okay.
One is a little indie game that's very short called Return to Grace. It is quite short. It's probably about 2 hours, maybe 2 to 3, depending on how you play it. And it is a first-person sci-fi puzzle game, I guess. I mean, there are puzzles in it, but it's sort of just like a story that you interact through, but you get to make choices in places. But it's there are puzzles, but nothing particularly challenging. I don't want to spoil too much, but basically in the far future, you play this woman who is an archaeologist who thinks she found this lost AI that used to run the solar system for hundreds of years and made everything wonderful. And then it disappeared and nobody knows why. And like all the records are gone because all the records were with this AI. And so she thinks she's found it. She wants to find it and maybe bring it back and whatever. And you go from there and you end up dealing with a lot of smaller AIs that are sort of splinters off from this main one in your, in your progress. And they all have different personalities. And so despite being in this isolated place where there's no other living soul, there's quite a cast of characters that interact with you all just on your little wrist communicator.
Oh.
And it's a very short game. It's an interesting story. It's not a particularly involved story. It's not a mind-blowing story at all. I realized afterwards, I liked it, but afterwards I was thinking about it, and I realized the point was the decisions I made. And in fact, there are only three possible endings, and really there are only two possible endings. To the degree that I cannot find details on the third one. I know what you have to do to do, but it's so like contraindicated. Like it's so you really would be doing things this way, and then at the last second you would switch it for no reason. And like there's no achievements associated with it. So it's really not an ending that is involved. So it's really only sort of two endings. But there's lots of decisions on the way. And it's sort of all the decisions, some of which are very small, some of which are very big, some of which don't even seem like decisions in the moment, end up sort of defining who your character turned out to be. And that sort of gets referenced and discussed near the end. And I found that very interesting. It's been very interesting to think about the idea of what you do and why you do it and what that says about you. So I thought it was pretty cool. It is very short. It is, it's very attractive game. It's really nice. I mean, it's not mind blowing graphics or anything, but it's really nice. And there are some really good effects and things. It's quite funny. It's got a lot of kind of funny dialogue. So I would recommend it, but as a very short thing and very sort of introspective thing, people want to check it out. And then the other one, and it brings me no pleasure to say this, but I am getting into Outer Worlds.
Why does it give you no pleasure?
Because it has taken me quite a while, and I'm not sure. I think it's a very good game.
Oh.
As early as this time yesterday, it was not clicking for me. And I have a variety of theories on that. Some of which is I just don't think it's world built. Like it's very much like a Fallout game. It's very, I mean, it's the same people who made Fallout New Vegas. And it's very clearly that kind of thing. This world is not feeling lived in to me. I also find the mechanics very unintuitive, but that I think that may be specific to me, but it's taken me a very long time to figure out how to do things. Despite having it set on the absolute lowest difficulty, I still have died quite a lot. I think I'm finally getting into it. Also, and this is weird to say, because the Fallout series is all about moral gray area and how there sort of often is no good choice and everything. But somehow this game is way more of a bummer. And I think part of it is it's Fallout is very much a spoof of a 60s sensibility.
Yeah.
And Outer Worlds is very much a spoof of a modern sensibility. And like the dystopia that exists is way too close to what is starting to exist in our real world. And it is relentless. Like nothing happens in this game that is not a joke about how corporations run everything and humans are just viewed as property. Like there was that kind of stuff in Fallout, but there were other things in between. But like every moment, and it's all done tongue in cheek, but it's just like constant. And I'm like, I'm getting real sad now. yeah. Oh, that's so close to what it's actually like to work at Amazon, I think. Oh, great, great. Yeah. Oh, look, Marauders. Can I join you, please? I'm also having a hard time with a lot of, and this is probably to its credit, but it just bothers me. a lot of the quests, I can't see where they're going to go. I've like already had to look up some shit to be like, okay, who's, because like the best scenario for the main quest on the first planet is to do the obviously bad thing and then do another thing you didn't know you could do that actually then makes things better. And I would never have guessed that. And to be fair, I have not left the first planet. I am literally on the verge of going to actually get in my spaceship and take off.
Oh.
And I feel like this first planet in a lot of ways was sort of a tutorial planet. And so that could be a thing. But I'm getting into it. I'm getting into it. I'm starting to feel it. I'm starting to get the hang of it. The systems are starting to make sense. I am very curious what the rest of it's going to show. So I'm getting there. But yeah, it just didn't. I don't know. I thought I was going to be coming here telling you I think I'm giving up, but something has compelled me, and I think I'm in it now. So we'll have to see. Sorry, don't tell your wife. I don't want her to be sad.
About what?
She gets so sad when I don't like the video games that she likes. All the time.
I think we sort of read it as a Mass Effect ripoff is what we kind of read it as. We didn't really compare it to Fallout, more to Mass Effect.
Interesting. Mass Effect doesn't have any of the real corporate culture there, and also Mass Effect isn't that funny.
Well, I don't think that's what we were thinking of.
I think we're just very much like a cartoonish comedy.
I suppose. But from the way, so I mean, the way Abby was looking at it, I guess the way I ended up looking at it too was just it's in space. You're using similar kinds of weapons. You're flying similar kinds of ships. I mean, there's a lot of practical level. It's very similar.
A lot of the made up technology is quite similar.
Yeah.
But narratively, I don't.
No. No, you're right about that. But
I think, like I said, these are people who made a Fallout.
Right. Well, and Abby doesn't pay that much attention to narrative, actually, when she plays.
I'm starting to get that sense, which is important for me to know, because I think it severely impacts when you and I recommend video games to each other, because that is my thing.
Yeah, I know.
It is extremely rare that I play a game just for mechanics. The closest I can get is like Horizon, but I love the story in Horizon also. Yeah. I guess Hi-Fi Rush is good. Hi-Fi Rush is funny, but it doesn't have that interesting of a story, but the mechanics are really good. Shows what I know. I think my brain just assumed that you guys do this shit for the narratives.
Well, it's not a completely unimportant aspect. It's just not like, and she plays it a little different than I would. Like if I were playing the same games that she played, if I were doing it just around, you know, she was watching me play, I'd be reading everything. The narrative would be far more important to me than it is to her, but she won't spend that much time reading, picking up stuff and reading it or really getting into the, any kind of backstory or character development. She does like world building, but so that she can feel immersed in it.
Yeah.
She's not super interested in everybody's little story or in the main plot or anything like that. I would be, but she's not.
Like, for example, it would not be difficult for me to have done the other endings in Return to Grace, but I didn't. Because I didn't feel comfortable making the decisions that I would needed to have made. And they weren't, it wasn't like to kill people and shit. Like, it just was like stuff that didn't sit right with me to the degree. And I didn't always feel this way. I used to screw around when in the early days of playing Fable, I would save a slot and be like, what would it be like if I just slaughtered this entire village to see what would happen? And I found it hilarious. And nowadays I cannot do, when I played the Star Wars games, I would play the good one and the bad one all the way through. And I'm like, I don't know that I can do that anymore. Well, that's interesting. I'll have to see. I think we're going to watch the Shogun TV series. I think that's what Trish is going to do for her next choice.
Oh.
Once it's finished.
I didn't even know there was going to be one of those.
Yeah. It's currently airing. It's on Hulu. I'm not that interested. I'm willing to watch it, but I read it when I was probably way too young to be reading it. And it is a giant book. It's like 1200 pages.
Oh.
And I read it probably in elementary school, maybe junior high, and loved it. Because I was at that age where I loved all the Japanese stuff. And also, it's very much of its time. And it was made more sense to me at the time. And nowadays, I'm like, I don't know. But it looks cool. So we'll see what happens. And I think people are liking it. So I saw the trailer for the new Crow movie.
They're I didn't know there was a
Crow.
I didn't know that either.
I kind of knew, or maybe just assumed, because it's a beloved property, but just sort of in the back of my head. But then YouTube said, you want to watch this trailer? And I was like, hell yeah, I want to watch this trailer. What is this nut thing? They definitely didn't make it for me.
Well, who's in it? Who stars in
it? Well, it's a Skarsgård.
Oh, which one?
They got us. I don't know. They all not Peter. But that's all I know. It's not Peter or Stellan. I don't know. Probably the Pennywise one. I don't know.
Well, that's William.
A young one. And they very clearly are changing parts. Oh, and Danny Huston, is the main bad guy. Hmm. He was the main. Well. He was who we thought was the main bad guy in the first Wonder Woman movie.
Oh, yeah.
And then it turned out to be Ron Weasley's dad. Spoilers. And I like him, and he was a good villain in that movie, for all that he wasn't really used to well. The trailer seems to imply something supernatural on his end. The trailer also has a bit post-everyone dying where... Skarsgård's guide says you have to hurry if you want to save her, which I'm like, isn't she dead? What? So like they're definitely doing different shit. And I'm also, you know, 47. So the Crow meant a lot to me in the 90s.
Right.
Now, no. So it doesn't look bad, and I'm like, y'all have it, but I was like, it's not, I don't, they clearly don't have me in mind, nor should they. It would be crazy if they did. Although that does lead the question, you know, if you're making it for young people who weren't around when the original was, why are you making it the Crow? But maybe you're trying to trick people my age. I don't know. But yeah, so that's out there.
Didn't know that. Yeah, the it guy is Bill Skarsgård.
Yeah, it might be him. Don't like we have an Alex also, I think?
It seems like there's a couple younger ones. But
And do we have some that aren't in the family? Like how we always had Daniel Baldwin and he wasn't technically a Baldwin?
I don't know. I don't know that.
Everywhere. Oh, I didn't tell you this one either. There's trailers all over the place. They are doing a limited series of Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
And it's starring in the title role, Andrew Scott. Moriarty from Sherlock.
Yeah.
The priest from Fleabag. I love him. I think he's going to kill it. I don't know. I shouldn't say Talented Mr. Ripley. Those are a series of novels with that character. And Talented Mr. Ripley was a specific one. I don't know that it is that same story, but it is that same character.
Okay.
It looks like it's going to be amazing. But I love Andrew Scott. I watch him in most things. I think he's really amazing. So yeah, all sorts of interesting. Also, Loot, the Apple TV comedy is getting a second season, which I did not think was happening. And Hacks, the HBO and Max comedy that we loved, is getting a third season, which I also didn't think was happening. So, crazy shit. Crazy time to live in.
Yep. Crazy time to live in.
I didn't think Loot was very popular, so that's why. Hacks just kind of resolved at the end of season two, so I just assumed they'd be done. But I highly recommend Hacks. Loot, I don't not recommend it, but if you don't watch it, that's fine too. I highly recommend Hacks.
Okay.
Very good.
All right.
Especially if you love Gene Smart, which all good-hearted people do. Give us a thing. Oh, I never explained how the show works. Well, first we do all that shit we just did, and then we do this part.
Stu wants to know.
Stu, what do you want to know?
Assuming you had the choice, would you prefer Star Trek-style food replicators or traditional cooking?
Oh. Huh. Now, this is interesting because apparently in the more recent, further in the future timeline Star Trek shows, it is literally canon that the food is made from poop.
Really?
This, I just recently watched an episode of Actually where this stuff came up, and in, I think, Star Trek Discovery, which is set later, and at that point they have a scarcity crisis. So it's not like the old Federation where we just, everybody had all they needed. So they, and apparently in some episode, they confide to somebody that nowadays they recycled human waste to replicate the food. So I'm less into that.
You're less into that. Okay.
I mean, you'd probably like it because you don't cook.
In a way, the food already comes ultimately from fertilizer and all kinds of stuff.
It's a circle of life, and it poops us all.
So in Brave New Worlds or whatever, the thing that's supposed to be like a prequel to the original series,
the Christopher Pike business.
Pike cooks. I mean, that's one of his things that he does as a hobby. He's got a kitchen, like a full kitchen in his quarters and all this other stuff. And there's a lot of scenes that are based.
They have replicators by that point.
What's that?
They do have replicators by that point.
Right. So, I don't know if it's been said, maybe it hasn't. I've forgotten. I don't know if it's been said that he and a lot of other people prefer the food that he cooks. Although it's never stated that he like replicates the ingredients or something. I don't know if that would matter, but I don't think he does. I think he gets fresh ingredients and cooks in his quarters, and he'll sometimes invite people for whatever. That's a common scene that they'll have where some group is visiting, or he has a friend, or he just decides to cook for part of the crew, and he'll cook stuff in his quarters and he'll serve it there too. So that's kind of become a part of that show that he does that. I don't remember any statement being made that food, anyone thought that food was better than the replicated food, but I mean, I have no way of knowing, never having had eaten replicated food.
You've never eaten replicated food? Tastes like poop.
You kind of think it'd be like, because here's the thing. A lot of factory processed and marketed food does not taste as good as food that someone makes. It just doesn't.
Yes.
And so I think we presume just in our heads that, well, this is a completely from the molecules up manufactured food so that maybe it would not have the same effect or the same quality as cooked food. And I mean, that makes sense to me in a way, because like, how do you capture, like, in for the with the replicator, how would it capture all of the nuance really in the pattern of the dish or whatever it is that you can get from actually cooking it? Seems like that would be hard.
Except when you consider that this is the same society that can replicate a human being and their clothing to the degree that their personality and memory is the same once it's done.
Yeah, that seems, you're right. That does seem pretty, that would have to incorporate a lot of subtle things.
I mean, sure. Beyond subtle, like yeah. If we are taking that as this is a society that can do that, there's no way they cannot replicate the exact same flavor in food. I cannot imagine that somehow that is a bridge too far. However, I think we might be dabbling too much in Star Trek. I think Stu might be asking the broader question. And you're a pill person, so you probably just eat replicated food.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm shocked you haven't started using Soylent.
I mean, it's, but it's also
like pancakes and donuts.
It's not just what the replicator can achieve in the dish. It's how you as a human being are going to taste it, right? So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, no, I think this gets into a nuanced thing, because we can do an equivalent of so many things that are now automated versus handmade. And the automation can achieve identical effect, and yet there is something intangible that some people at least will appreciate in the handmade equivalent.
Well, also, you, as you're pointing out, you're making a dish one way. Like, part of the reason people don't like these manufactured dishes is because they're not seasoned or whatever the way mom would do it or whatever.
Yeah.
So if you have the replicator do it, you're going to run into the same problem where it's going to give you one version of beef stroganoff, for example, that maybe 50% of the people are going to like. And the other 50% is like, well, that's not the way my mom or my dad or whoever made it, yeah, you know, or this restaurant made it.
Although theoretically, if we are talking on a similar scale to Star Trek, you can program it and adjust it accordingly.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's in true. Theory, because they do that sometimes on things where they will fine tune or replicate a recipe. In theory, the only way I can think to do that is you cook the dish and then like stick it on a thing and be like, okay, zap that. That's what I want you to make from now.
Yeah, make a sample. Right. Yeah, right.
But let's just play in the space here of if it was indistinguishable, and if I really had the capacity to fine tune it to whatever degree I wanted, I would probably almost exclusively eat replicator food. I still might sometimes cook or have someone cook, but largely for the experience. In the same reason now that I don't just cook food at home just because it necessarily tastes better. There are other components to it. And the experience of having created something yourself, of having worked on something. And that can be cool. And then having this tasty thing at the end. If it's more generic and I can only get one kind of beef stroganoff or whatever, I still probably do it pretty often, but not as often. Because I value variety in my food a great deal. And so a replicator can always give me a near infinite variety that my own skills and the ingredients at hand can't do myself.
Well, I do think the point of showing him cooking and liking to cook in Star Trek is what, even if people do like it better, that's not the point of it. I think the point of it in the show is to sort of work against the usual science fiction trope is as soon as some science innovation replaces the need to do a thing, that people will stop doing it. And of course, we see that's just not true, right? I mean,
well, except the real trope is the protagonist in any science fiction story has some old timey thing that they're into.
No, I know that.
For that exact reason. So
I know that, but I think Star Trek has been particularly guilty of like, oh, people won't do this anymore because of this technological thing. And that's just not true. For example, you see a lot of science fiction where there's no books, no paper.
Yeah,
that's probably not going to happen. You know, book, people still like books. They like the feel of them. That's probably always going to be true. Or theater. Oh, now, you know, after we have television or we have computers that can just, I mean, we're kind of reached that place now. They've demonstrated AI being able to make very realistic looking, you know, trailer quality scenes and stuff. And so people get the idea that, oh, no one will have to write screenplays or anything anymore. No, yeah. they'll still do that.
And there is an assumption that the protagonist is always an exception. But I still think that's a very deliberate thing on storytellers is the protagonist is always into Shakespeare or old detective fiction or whatever. And we as the audience are like, yeah, I'd be one of those too. I appreciate the pet. But the assumption is it's weird that he's into Shakespeare.
Yeah,
everybody else is still. I always loved, somebody pointed out, there's never any new culture in Star Trek. They're all way in, and actually fucking the Orville, the Seth MacFarlane show really leans into this hard. Like nobody has turns of phrase from the 22nd century.
Yeah.
It's always the earlier shit.
Yeah.
It's always 20th or 19th or 18th century that they're all into. But no, I mean, I think that Pike cooking is Picard obsessing with Shakespeare and Janeway into detective fiction and Kirk into, I guess, old-fashioned penetrative sex. I don't really know what his old-fashioned thing was. I mean, maybe misogyny. That's it. Like in the 22nd century, misogyny's gone, but Kirk still indulges in it because it's, you know.
I think his thing was going to planets that are just like Earth, except 50 years earlier and stuff.
Yeah,
like
that. There it is.
That did happen more than once.
I appreciate past planets more than our modern sci-fi planets. That's what it was.
Yeah.
I was thinking recently. So the first, hold on just a second. My phone is absolutely fucking exploding and I want to make sure nobody's dying or anything. No, nobody's dying. Okay. Sorry. The very first Star Trek The Next Generation episode, Encounter at Farpoint,
right,
is the introduction of Q.
Yes.
And at that point, Q's whole thing is humans suck. So go back to your solar system because you suck. And I don't want you sucking all over everything else. And he deliberately starts going through our history. And that one actually does it. So he starts off pretending to be someone from the 20th century wanting to fight the commies and how warlike humans are because of that. And Picard's like, oh, come on. It was the 20th century, long time ago. Blah, blah, blah. And then he jumps to what the 21st century is, which at the time was the future. And there it's all about drugs. And they've got these weird suits and the little snorty thing or whatever. And I realized recently, I mean, we're still very early in the 21st century, but there's something to that.
Hmm.
drugs as a part of our culture. And I don't mean exclusively recreationally. In fact, for the most part, I would say not exclusively recreationally, but medication and balancing out your life through prescriptions or sometimes through self-medication and things like that. That is becoming much more of a broad cultural mainstay than it was in the 20th century.
Hmm.
And I wonder if Roddenberry somehow had the foresight or if it's just coincidence. But, and I mean, it was showing up that there's actually an interview in, I think, the 70s where George Carlin talks about how we're a very drug-based culture. And it's very weird that marijuana specifically is considered bad, but we take drugs for everything else. We take drugs so we can sleep. We take drugs so we can wake up. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, that's even more so now. And don't get me wrong, I embrace the hell out of it. But it's just very interesting because at the time I was like, yeah, whatever. That's what the 21st century will be. And I was like, it kind of is, though. How'd that happen? All right, so give me the two versions. Food's not quite as exciting with the replicator, or food can be exactly the way you want it in the replicator. Give me both versions. What are you doing?
I mean, like you were saying, if you could, like, you know, put a sample in, like make a dish, say here, replicate this, yeah. and it could do it. I guess I don't know why I wouldn't do that. I mean, what would be the reason not to do it?
Well, like I said, sometimes the experience itself.
Oh.
In that situation, I would still on occasion want to cook or want people to cook for me for the experience of.
Right. And again, that's what I think they're trying to get across with Pike doing it. It's like people still like to do it. Right. Yeah. Just because a robot can do it doesn't mean nobody's going to want to do it. And he likes to do it. You're right. Also right, though, in pointing out that he's stands out and wanting, like, not everybody does it. Not very many people. Like, he's the only person on the whole ship, I think, that does it. So you're right. He is supposed to sort of stand out for wanting to do that.
Like they all do.
But somebody wants to do it, right? Like,
and that's the thing. That's a common trope in a lot of, even outside of sci-fi, detective fiction. Our protagonist uses an old-timey notebook instead of a phone or whatever.
Yeah, like, that's weird.
The issues where the primary protagonist of any story is technologically hobbled.
Yeah.
Is so common.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, Bones didn't like transporters and things like that.
Yep. Wizards in the Dresdenverse can't use technology after World War II.
It's odd.
There's a philosophy behind that.
There is?
There's a lot of people have that sort of, I mean, if nothing else, it's sort of a hipster philosophy.
Oh,
like the cool stuff was in the past,
I guess.
Like
vinyl, I mean, records even, and
crime solving is very common. This kind of thing. Fucking the show where Eric, what's his name? Will from Will and Grace is a schizophrenic crime solver. He listens to music all the time, and he listens to it on an old Walkman and tapes. and that's just because that's what he likes. Set in their ways is another common aspect of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't think I realized this was such a thing until you started talking about it.
I didn't necessarily. And then you said, like, it's interesting that he does this. And I'm like, but wait, everybody kind of does this.
Yeah.
No, and I think it's, I suppose it also depends on the demographic you're appealing to. But older generations, which mystery genres often get into that, and procedurals, like to believe, well, you know, back in the day, we made things to last, and we Battlestar freaking Galactica.
Yeah.
the newer one. The whole deal was that Adama was like, I don't like these newfangled computers. We're just going to keep the old ones. And that happened to be the way to avoid genocide.
Yeah. Yep. Because they couldn't genocide hack the network.
Because he was using an old 2400 baud modem.
Yep. They couldn't hack the network of the ships because there wasn't a network really.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I think there is a specific school of philosophy behind this. I mean, it also is a shortcut to, you always want your protagonist to have an eccentricity. Your protagonist has to be distinctive somehow.
Yeah.
Easy way is to be like, they don't use this modern thing.
And the best way to do that for a character that you're portraying in the far future is to show how they've got something in common with you as the viewer. So an interest in the 20th century or 20th century idioms or whatever. Mm. Yeah.
And even if it's a modern day sci-fi or espionage thing, we like to see like, oh, that's how they can get things done. Cause they work outside. They think outside the box.
Yeah, like, but in a
way. Oh, see, you've got all your Bluetooth going on, but I roll up a tiny piece of paper that I've written a code on, and I just shove it in your cheek when you're running around, and then you get it later. Nobody can hack that. You have to get it out quick, though, or the ink will spread.
I mean, also filmmakers are finding, modern filmmakers are finding success using conventional effects rather than CGI, so there's something to be said. For on a practical level, some old ways of doing things are better.
But and Wes Anderson makes every single movie look like it's from the 60s, regardless of when it is set, although it is often set in no specific time.
Yeah.
The black and white thing.
Mm.
That is by definition, because I have it on good authority that back in the day, there were still colors in the world.
Oh.
So you are not trying to evoke an earlier time period. You are trying to evoke an earlier period of filmmaking when you do that.
Yeah. Yep.
So that is specifically a technological decision. I mean, obviously it's technological in the execution, but you are specifically evoking an earlier technology.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean,
real heroes are in black and white. Real heroes cook. Real heroes only read books from 300 years ago.
Do you think you'd have, but you think you would do the replicator thing, except when you wanted the experience of cooking?
If it was perfect, I think regardless it would be the case. If it wasn't perfect, or if I couldn't get, you know, mom's meatloaf, I could just get a good meatloaf. It would maybe happen a little more often because it would happen when I'd want mom's meatloaf.
Yeah, well.
But still, yeah. I would mostly not. I am a late adopter to technology, but I'm very into technology. So I wouldn't be the first person to get a replicator. But once all the kinks were worked out and most people were using them, I would jump on that shit.
Yeah, once they didn't just randomly have rad in it every once in a while.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Once you're like, this tastes really good. Where's my finger?
I mean, I suppose people could object to it on grounds of like taking jobs or something like that, but I don't know.
They definitely could. Everybody usually can on taking jobs. That's a big one.
Yeah.
They took her jobs.
I don't know. I just don't think, I really don't think that transporter technology and replicator technology are supposed to be the same thing. And the fact that they have something called a Heisenberg, what do they call it? They have some device that's supposed to neutralize the Heisenberg principle. It's like, well, that's impossible. I guess that's just never going to happen. Replicators, just not going to happen, folks.
Yeah.
No. Transporters, just not going to happen.
Although.
Compensator, Heisenberg compensator, it's called. That's physically impossible.
That's actually actually, it's like Narcan. So when you have that really good crystal meth, it sobers you up. Yeah. That is a Breaking Bad joke. I hope somebody out there appreciates it. Although, according to the incredibly reliable source of the British panel show QI, teleportation has actually occurred.
Yeah, quantum teleportation.
Yes. Only on an informational level at this point.
No.
Not a physical level. But that worked. But yeah, it's not the same thing. And also, we don't know the brain well enough that we could, even if we could teleport all the matter, we could do it and make sure we were still us. And then we get the whole, are you destroying the earlier version? So then who's the real you? And
well, they are destroying the earlier version and making a new version.
Yeah.
That is happening. But so the only question left is.
Explain that to Thomas Riker.
The only thing left is, does the you somehow transfer to the new person? Which, I mean, if that person has all the same memories and thinks they're the same, I guess they're the same, but it's a different body. It's not the exact same molecules and whatever, but then every 7 years we supposedly turn over all of that. So what difference does it make? I don't know.
The William of Theseus.
Well, I mean, nobody knows the answer to these questions or probably ever can. So
there's a video game that I now might play because it's first person and I could do that. Called Soma, that is a sci-fi game that deals with this exact concept and is all about identity and what that means. And it's the problem is I know the whole story because I never thought I would play it. And it's very interesting, but I don't know how to play it out. That being said, you know what I'm going to play now that I know that I can do this? BioShock. I never played BioShock.
Oh, you never played BioShock? Wow.
No, because I couldn't play BioShock. Because I would throw up.
Oh, it's first person.
It's the first person.
Yep. Abby loved it. Abby loved it.
Everybody loved BioShock. I want to play BioShock. Again, for the story.
Yeah, I mean, so that's it. So sometimes games.
Fair, I know the story already, but still.
Sometimes games sort of force you kind of to follow the story. And of course, so she will. But like in open games, she might skip reading this.
Oh, yeah. And I do that too. And I'm playing those for different sandbox games and stuff like that. I play sort of for a different reason usually. Yeah. Which is why Red Dead 2 has been very weird for me because the story, you never can get away from the story. It permeates everything so much. I was thinking, actually, while I was playing Return to Grace, I like video games as a different medium of story. Yeah. Like, Return to Grace could have been a movie. Real, real easy.
Mm.
And it would probably have been almost identical to what happened, except obviously I would have been able to make the choices. And like I said, retroactively, I realized that the choices were what mattered. But at the time, I was just going through the story, and it was an interesting story. But it could have been a movie. And there's something engaging. There's something about that I really like. And it's another way of me watching a movie, reading a book, whatever. Playing a game to that end.
Yeah.
That I think is part of why I really like video games. And part of why a lot of them don't work for me, because that's not always the purpose of the video games.
Yeah, I do like it when a game like understands that it's a very specific kind of storytelling and it tries to capitalize on the things that are unique to gameplay to tell that story.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that. I mean, I like that about anyone who, like, you know, a novel is a very specific kind of storytelling. The people who capitalize on the strengths of that medium to make it a better story or the strengths of that medium to make a better movie or TV show. I always like it when I can tell the person understands the medium they're working in and that the way they tell this story wouldn't be told the same way in some other medium or maybe couldn't be told the same way in another medium. I really love that. I really love that.
All right. Well, Are you the same William that started this episode?
Nope. You never enter the same river twice.
Is this one also into toes? Thank you for listening to this episode. If you want us to debate your Star Trek fan fiction, I don't remember what we did. If you want us to do the thing we just did with Stu's email, then you should email us, themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. With your emails, you can help us make a podcast and do less of that shit we were doing in the beginning. Also, if you have comments on how much poop would you eat out of a replicator? I genuinely can't remember what we've been talking about. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com, and talk about any of this stuff. Also, did you play Outer Worlds? Who's right? Is it Mass Effect? Is it Fallout? Is it good? We don't know. Did you play Return to Grace? Do you want to play Return to Grace? I could come over. We could play it. I mean, I'd have to bring my Xbox. But sure. Also, how you doing? You can just tell us that if you want.
Yeah, just tell us how you're doing.
One of us is the therapist, and the other one pretends.
Let them guess which one.
Keep writing in. We went to a bakery in Kelowna and had some really good baked goods, including a really good donut.
Oh.
Recently.
Yeah, Kelowna's great.
I don't know why I said that, but anyway. You should go to Kelowna and get a donut. But first, send an email. Then you can get a donut. I give you permission. Mama said.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.